Have you seen the CNBC like people this week, like all the anchors? They are so bullish Bitcoin. And like these other traps, like Jamie Dimon comes on, Gary Gensler comes on, and they're like, no, that's actually not how Bitcoin works. Like they correct them. And it's like so great. CNBC has completely 180 pivoted on crypto. And why? Crypto. It's because they have an asset to sell. Bankless Nation, it is the third week of January and it's time for your weekly roll up. David, we got so much to cover. What are we starting with?
The Bitcoin ETF 1 week later, was it a flop or was it a smashing success? We'll got the numbers to report back to you on that one.
Also, we have a good banker, bad banker episode. We've got Larry Fink getting crypto pilled. He wants tokenization. We'll talk about that. And on the bad banker side, we have Jamie Dimon, and he reveals the secret risk to Bitcoin that only Jamie Dimon knows. Tantalizing. What could that be? What else we got, David?
After that, we got some updates about the Ethereum roadmap. The blobs are coming. The blobs are coming. And we also got some airdrops to discuss as well. We're going to laugh about the SEC for a little bit. And we're also going to talk about the Solana phone, part deuce, as well.
You know where I want to start? Yeah, I'm ready, man. And you know where I want to start us today is actually the airdrop piece, okay? Because it's kind of airdrop season. I don't know if you noticed. And
it's definitely
Jupiter, which is the biggest DEX on Solana, just announced the date of their JUP token launch that is upcoming. You know what that date is, David?
Tell me.
Last day of January. January 31st.
Okay. What day is it? It is the 18th. That is in 10 days.
Yeah, so that's going to happen. I mean, this is just like airdrop season, and a lot of this is happening in different layer two ecosystems and on Solana and other places. And I just wanted to shout out an opportunity for bankless citizens. That opportunity is to go quest for some airdrops. And you do that with a bankless citizenship. So once you get a bankless citizenship, you have access to a tool that we have developed. It's called the Airdrop Hunter. And what the Airdrop Hunter tries to do is predict these airdrops in advance and the things that you might need to do, the ways to explore these chains and protocols and apps so that you might qualify for an airdrop. And guess what, David? You know what was on there? The Jupiter Exchange. It was on the Airdrop Hunter. We've got some quests for
airdroppers. It's been on there for a long, long time. We have this cool little thing in there where you can see how many other citizens are hunting airdrops. 673 citizens have hunted the Jupiter airdrop up to the point that the date of the airdrop was announced, which is not typical of an airdrop. I can only assume that if they have announced the airdrop, the snapshot has been taken. So congrats to the 673 citizens that have hunted the Jupiter airdrop. I know like airdrop hunting, we try and make it precise. There's like farming and then there's what we do, which is hunting, which is the actual steps, the ways to increase your on-chain footprint, the diversity and variety of things that you can do, which is also simultaneously learning how to use crypto. So that's actually a nice synergy that we have with the Airdrop Hunter, where you get to increase your on-chain footprint. You get to hopefully hunt some airdrops. But also, there are also just walkthroughs for, like, their demos for
apps.
It's
fun. It's fun to do stuff on-chain.
It's supposed to be fun.
And crypto pays you to learn about crypto, guys. It's that season again. Anyway, there's a 10% off code if you want to become a bankless citizen and go access the Airdrop Hunter. It's not just about Jupiter. It's about what next?
There's
over like
60,
70 quests on here, or not quests, but different opportunities you can pursue and all of the quests that accompany it. So go check that out in the Bankless show notes or bankless.com/join. Again, the code is podcast24 if you want a 10% off discount. All right, David, let's talk about markets today. And thanks to Kraken for these glorious charts. We're looking at Bitcoin. Glorious. What's Bitcoin showing us?
Bitcoin showing us down because it was a sell the news event. Surprise.
The
Bitcoin ETF. Yeah. So selling the news down 10%, started the week at 46,380. Yeah,
double digit sell?
Yeah. Yeah. Double digits. Yeah.
In
down to where
this
we are
market?
at $42,000. Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, okay. It's not like the Bitcoin ETF was a secret. I think people knew about it. Bitcoin his price performance has been pretty crazy. It was a sell the news event. And I think some people are like, bruh, what's going on? ETF was supposed to be bullish. That's not how markets work. But also, the point about the ETF is bullish over time. Hold on. It ages like wine.
You don't get your bullishness now, okay? Sometimes you have to wait for your bullishness. And by the way,
it's not an event. It's flows.
We got a lot of that bullishness since the summer of this year anyway. But like some people look at these charts and just assume that the Bitcoin ETF was not successful. We'll talk about that in detail later, but like it was kind of successful. Let's talk about ETH though before we get there. ETH on the week. What are we looking at? Down?
down 5% start of the week at 2,600, currently at 2,480, down 5%, which means the ETH BTC ratio is up 6%. We are almost up to 0.06, which I would still consider low. But in recent terms, the ETH ratio has been recovering, especially this week.
Yeah, I think we're getting some of that, again, pent up ETH ETF.
Yeah, now people are just going to do the whole like, oh, now ETH ETF, and then they're going to sell the news on the ETH ETF in like May.
We talked about that a little bit last week while you're out, you know, slaying Horcruxes, David, with Anthony Sassano. And yeah, he agrees too. Like ETH ETF next. Crypto market cap, what are we at on the week?
Same, 1.73 billion. I want that too. I want a two.
Yeah, a two would be a rice net. When's the last time we hit two, by the way? When was that?
Like before Terra Luna, right?
Last time we were at two. We haven't been at two since February of 2022.
Yeah, Terra Luna. Yep, that's right.
Around that time horizon. Terra Luna was March, right? We hit it in March as well. And then
2022? Yeah, it's Terra Luna. I'm calling it. Yeah.
The first time we hit 2 trillion, by the way, was April 2021. So... like that was kind of the top of top-ish of the bull market, right?
top of the Ethereum bull market. Yeah, that was the top of ultrasound money.
The early bull market.
Ultrasound money meme has been down only since like April 2021.
Let's get to layer two metrics with the layer two update brought to you by Mantle, which is a new and upcoming layer two that we are enjoyers of. What's layer two be showing us on total locked value on layer two? So we get another all-time high?
I saw it earlier this week at 22.22 billion. So that was an enjoyable number. It's at 21.8 right now, but yes, all time highs.
Ish.
Very bigly.
You know, the last couple of weeks has been all time high. Look at this from Grow the Pie. New all time high for TVL across layer twos. A gigantic 3 billion increase. I guess this was the all time high. This is from January 15th. So that did happen. Okay. And by the way, 58% of this. In Arbitrum.
Arbitrum is kind of just a gargantuan. One of the things that's been really determining the ETH market lately is this whole Celsius shenanigans. Celsius cancer, I should say. Celsius was like dumping hundreds of thousands of ETH onto the market. At the same time, Sailor was buying a bunch of Bitcoin, which is like why the ETH BTC ratio has just been absolutely decimated. So I saw this interesting tweet thread from 0x Bobo Shanti. Thank you so much. Who put a tweet together saying, with over 40 hours of research gone on investigating the Celsius balance sheet, I'll explain why I believe that it is wrong that the remaining 584,000 Ether that Celsius has is going to be sold.
Wait. So hold on. The facts are they have 500,000 ETH still, and people are worried that they might continue to dump on us that additional 500,000 ETH?
$584,000, $1.4 billion are in their wallets.
Ooh, I don't want that.
And so far in 2024, they've transferred 92,000 ETH to Coinbase and Falcon X, which if you read the tweet thread, they'll explain what that is. It is a good, thorough tweet thread. We don't have enough time to cover it here, but we will skip to the conclusions where they think, based on legal filings and on-chain analysis from Arkham, they say 536,000 Ether will be distributed in kind for unsecured claims.
This is like bankruptcy claims we're talking about.
Bankruptcy
right?
claims, yes. In kind means they're not selling it. They're just like, here's the ETH rather than here's the dollars, which they would have to sell for. 62,000 ETH will be distributed in kind for convenience claims, and 26,000 ETH has been likely already sent to Coinbase and PayPal to process the custody claims distribution. TLDR, is extremely unlikely that Celsius has much more, if any, ETH available to sell. If you want the analysis, the details, the investigation from this Twitter account, there's a link in the show notes so you can go unpack that. But yeah, 584,000 ETH going to be distributed around, but apparently not sold, which is good news.
I can keep you updated too, David. I still have some Celsius, ETH.
Let me know when you get that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel even close. They just keep sending me emails about like, don't be fished. Like, be careful. And like legal things are proceeding and all of that. So I think a question here though, David, is if they are doing in kind, like they're sending ETH back to basically the claimants, whether the claimants, like people like me, maybe will sell this ETH or not, or whether they'll hold it. I mean, like, I know what I'm going to do. I ain't going to be selling no ETH. Okay. If I get ETH from Celsius, you stake your ETH at times like this. You don't sell. At least that's my take. But I don't know if everyone feels that way.
Yeah. I don't know if it's really an important question because, like, who are the Celsius creditors and why are they meaningfully different from the average ETH holder? Like maybe they have some taxes or debts that they have to cover and they've just had locked up capital. So yeah, some amount of capital lockup will result in some amount of selling, but
The only difference is they are unlike average ETH holders in that, like, one, they're just the subset of like retail and probably like, I don't want to say like less sophisticated retail. Putting myself in that bucket.
They're not on chain.
Yeah, they're less on chain than many ETH holders. And the second thing is it's been frozen. It's been frozen for a very long time for them.
Right.
Other ETH holders have not had frozen ETH. So we'll have to see. Maybe there's a little bit left. David, do you catch this? The 2023 Electric Capital Developer Report. They do this every year. So let me just give you the highlights, though. Developers overall are down. Okay. Here's the sunny skies. The most valuable segment of developers are those that have a 2+ tenure. They contribute the most code. That is still growing. So that's good news. But bad news for the US, okay? The US is losing developer share in crypto. So now 72% of developers are now outside North America. So sorry, Canada, Mexico, America. The US just lost 14% of developer share since 2018. And it's now only 26% of developers. And you can really see who's picking up the slack here. It's South Asia, Latin America, Eastern Europe, Western Africa, Southern Europe. They grew developer share by 20%. I am like cheering that on, okay? US, if you're going to be stupid and mean to developers, guess what? They're going to go outside of your borders and they're going to build the cool stuff there. Like, I mean, you're lost. That's what's going to happen. I mean, I hate this because it's a self-inflicted wound to the US, but it is a good, I'm glad that this is internationalizing, particularly in some of these emerging economies. I think that's bullish for crypto.
Yeah. And then Elizabeth Warren is like, good. I didn't want them anyways.
Yeah, but here's the thing, man. Like these countries, people in other regions will think up use cases that the West doesn't even think of. They don't have a problem with it because they're, you know, their Visa card works or something like this. So anyway, bullish crypto, because I think we'll get some more diversity in use cases. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, we're going to unpack the metrics of the Spot Bitcoin ETF 1 week later. We're going to talk to Larry Fink and hear what he's excited about.
He's coming on? We're talking to Larry Fink?
Right now. Yeah, right after this. And then Ethereum blobs have hit the testnet and they're coming for us. So stay tuned. We're going to get to all this and more. But first, I'm going to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, the place we get these charts at the beginning of the show, and the place that you should use to get on-chain this bull market summer. Yeah. Go ahead and click the link in the show notes to get started with Kraken.
Bull market summer. I love it.
Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to US and US territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax for providing token awards for your team? Toku simplifies everything about managing token grant compensation, and you can get started with them for free. You'll have access to top-notch legal and tax support to handle the distribution and management of tokens for your team. Toku caters to every step in the process, from user-friendly legal templates for granting tokens to tracking vesting periods and calculating withholding taxes. Toku understands every grant structure, token purchase agreements, restricted token awards, restricted token units, token options, and all the other ones. Toku is already simplifying this today for leading companies like Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Foundation, and many more. You can learn more about how Toku can help you streamline your token management and get started for free. Visit Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the description below. 1 week of Bitcoin ETF trading. How did it do? Did it flop or did it rocket? Eric Bakchunas says, latest, day three in the books of the total rolling net flows. Net flows is both buying and selling. Is 782 million as the newborn nine, that he calls it, the nine Bitcoin ETFs.
Ooh, I like that. Eric's a good memer.
He really is. They have more than offset the GBTC gouge, which is now up to $1.2 billion offset from the NAV to discount. Okay, so the nines, $2 billion in AUM and $4.5 billion in volume organic is fabulous for the first 3 days and a solid percent premium too. So overall, what this means is that there has been a lot of outflows from the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, over $108 billion, and net new inflows of $2 billion. A skeptic put out this tweet saying, is this me or is this really underwhelming? Only $800 million of inflows into the BTC ETFs so far. And Eric Balchunas responds to this skeptic saying, this is a flop, right? And he goes, I think it's not a flop. These numbers are highly unusual for a new launch. Most ETFs get less than $1 to $2 million in the first week. These are all 20 to 500 times that. And so Eric Balchunas, who again is more or less the expert on ETFs, is saying this is a categorical win, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There are four leaders of the nine. There are four leaders here. iShares, which is BlackRock, coming in at $710 million. Fidelity coming in at $524 million, followed by Bitwise, the crypto native ETF company that we know and love, $305 million, followed by Cathie Wood's ARK 21 shares at $227 million. So we always know that it was always going to represent some sort of distribution, you know, power law, nature has power law. But this is really close, Ryan. Like BlackRock, Fidelity, Bitwise, 700, 525, 300. Like really close neck and neck race, I'd say.
Yeah, we got a gold, silver, bronze, and they're all within striking distance of each other. Yeah. It's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. So the question of are we happy about these inflows, total net inflows? The answer to that question has got to be yes. And that's what Balchunas is saying. Yeah. But also, I think like Grayscale needed, it's healthy for it to have that outflow. Remember, all of that was stuck inside of the Grayscale container for like years to like disastrous effect in 2022, mm-hmm. as we talked about so much. Now it's being unlocked. This is even the outflows are healthy. Like, I mean, that's how we kind of get a stable base and our feedback under us with these ETF markets.
Well, also the Grayscale ETF charges 1.5% fee yearly. And the BlackRock, I think, charges 0.25%. I think
Bitwise still do? Charges... Does Grayscale still charge that much, or have they been?
Yes, they lowered their price from 2% to 1.5%, whereas all of the others are in the like 0.2 to 0.25, maybe 0.3 range.
Okay.
I think Bitwise is the lowest at 0.2. Why is Grayscale keeping their fee at 1.5%? I think they are just betting that there's going to be just a lot of dormant GBTC holders who don't check their brokerages, don't know, don't care.
It's probably a good calculated bet, honestly.
They are charging like 5 to 10 times as much, and so they're not going to lose too much. So yeah, they're just raking in the fees on that one. Another tweet from Eric Balchunas was talking about the volumes. So what is volumes? Buying and selling of the underlying to make sure that the ETF actually trades at par. He goes, another way to put the Bitcoin ETF flows in ETF context, besides showing their numbers relative to past new launches, which is the more frequent thing that we've been doing recently, is showing how they stack up to all ETFs in the past 1 week of flows. So comparing the Bitcoin ETFs to other general ETFs like the QQQ, the NASDAQ ETF. So he says, even after 4 days, two of them are in the top five of all ETFs in
volume.
That's
a big deal. That's a big
deal. That's a big deal. And three of them are in the top 10, up there with the studs, VOOQQQL et al. Volume, apparently, is like a health metric for ETFs.
Yeah.
And we have three Bitcoin ETFs in the top 10 of all ETFs. All ETFs. That's like hair on end crazy, I'd say.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a good sign. QQQ is NASDAQ, right? What do you know what the VOO is?
What did I say?
No, you said that. You nailed it.
NASDAQ. Wow, good for me.
I don't know my ETFs, David. I don't know what the VOO is. I don't know what the IVV is. I assume these are very important ETFs, and Balchunas is probably like shaking
his fist at us. Very trad and serious. Vanguard S&P 500 ETF Dividend Yield. Yeah, that is a boomer name right there. You said earlier Eric Balchunas is a good memer. Here's a actual meme, a mid-curve meme, where Eric has the person in the middle saying, bruh, how come never go down? I thought these ETFs were supposed to pump. I've been inside the house and online for the past 72 hours straight. Win, moon. And then left and right, we have people saying, some people probably sold the news after 80% run up, no biggie. My tweet this week was, everyone just have patience. The Bitcoin ETF will age like wine. It's not about the event, it's about the flows.
Aging like wine. You know, another aging theme like of wine. This event, and I think the rest of today's episode is, Dave, the bankers are shilling our bags now. Can you believe it? Wall Street is
unholy
like...
Unholy alliance.
Choo-choo is on board, okay?
Like fees, this, baby. Yeah,
this is the Fidelity homepage last week, okay? Well, this is the BlackRock homepage. You seen this?
Mm-hmm.
Access Bitcoin, iShares. Here's Fidelity. Their homepage. I'm talking about the homepage. They're basically like, okay, for people who can't see this, the Fidelity Wise Origin Bitcoin Fund, easier exposure to Bitcoin without buying Bitcoin directly. Wow, what a fantastic product.
Nice, nice and protected and safe Bitcoin. Yeah,
it's so legal. I like my Bitcoin clean.
it's super legal.
Not self-sovereign and like banked.
don't touch that bald man's exchange. Touch our exchange.
The best kind of Bitcoin. I don't know why that's my Fidelity voice, but you know that's what it is, David. The Fidelity Wise Origin Bitcoin Fund. So they're shilling it. They're just very excited about a product to sell. Mm-hmm. And you know, someone once told me there's a little bit of capital still on Wall Street. I think they got some money over there, David.
They do have some money. Yeah.
Did you also see the Franklin?
Their money is becoming our money.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay.
These are the rules. That's what ETFs do.
Did you also see the Franklin Templeton account? Like, I don't know what happened on Twitter to Franklin Templeton. This is like a TradFi of TradFi, but like they seem to be all in on crypto. What in the world are we looking at?
Yeah. So Franklin Templeton, $1.4 trillion asset manager. I saw this tweet right after we got done with the podcast, and I thought, oh God, like the Franklin Templeton Twitter got account.
You thought it got hacked.
I thought it got hacked. and then I scroll up and I see that like, oh, announcing our digital assets team has taken over our Twitter account for the next 2 hours.
Nice.
And they are just firing just like dank memes after dank memes.
Nice.
Like laser-eyed Ben Franklin, Bank Franklin with a hat. Oh my God. The sophistication of these memes, like... I bet you they listen to Bankless. They probably listen to Bankless, whoever's on that digital asset team.
Oh, yeah.
They are one
Shout
of
out.
Us.
They good are, job.
They make, I mean, we make some okay memes. They were making some
How really did good they memes. Do this? Franklin Templeton, I didn't know you had this level of crypto meme talent. Like, who
Do
are you?
You know that everyone in the rest of the company who's dealing with, like, mortgages and, like, bonds are
Serious
like, what
things?
What the hell is going on with
you
our
should give him a
account?
Flavor. I know there's a meme of the week from Franklin Templeton, but here's the tweet. You are unsure how to feel about laser-eyed Ben. They just activated the account's laser eyes, too. Just think instead of Ben with hat. With hat, so that's like meme
with
culture.
Hat, with hat, yeah. So there is, I think it's a Solana dog token, a dog with hat. And it's like a doge with a hat, and it just pumped, and now it is part of our culture now.
This kid owns some deep crypto bags, let me tell you, his or her own. I think that's happened.
Imagine like the Zoomer intern who works at Franklin Templeton, and he's got like a bag of shitcoin, Solana shitcoins. He's just like firing off tweets off the Franklin Templeton account.
I can't imagine that. Wow. Not all the banks are on board though, David. I gotta tell you. I'll call all of these things loosely bank. I don't think Vanguard is like a bank. Like that's not what they would call themselves, but they hold a lot of assets. So they have their, anyway, we'll get into that. Vanguard won't offer spot Bitcoin ETFs. They say the high volatility is bad for generating long-term returns. So they've actually actively, what's the opposite of supported? Like
boycotted?
Banned, you know, not allowed Vanguard users, unlike Fidelity. Like Vanguard is very similar to Fidelity in a lot of ways, which is very crypto forward. But Vanguard has said, basically, it has no plans to offer Bitcoin ETFs or crypto products. Its high volatility runs counter to our goal of helping investors generate positive real returns over the long term, which is kind of funny because like, go look at Bitcoin price over the long term in its entire history. It's only been down 3 years. In all of the other years, like it's been up only and like massively up. It's been a fantastic asset class. So it has generated positive real returns. This is Chainlink God saying, Vanguard offered investors the ability to purchase GBTC for years, even as it traded at extreme premiums discounts over NAVs. So that's kind of ironic, right? They won't allow the Bitcoin ETF, but they allowed GBTC for years. He goes on, but as soon as GBTC converts into a spot ETF and properly tracks NAV, suddenly high volatility is a blocker and it gets delisted. Smells fishy. I don't know why. Like, I guess that's kind of weird. I guess it smells fishy. I can't think of what the incentive would be. It's just like maybe someone's just kind of folding their arms and saying, I don't like Bitcoin at Vanguard. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. So, okay. Say there are two populations. If we're talking about like from a business sense, people are going to read this like message. Vanguard is no longer accepting purchase of cryptocurrency products, including Bitcoin futures ETFs. And then you have your customers and or non-customers. And do any non-customers read that and be like, oh, I'm going to convert to Vanguard. I'm going to put more money in Vanguard because they made this choice. How many of those are there of those types of people versus the other types of people who are like, oh, Vanguard's not letting me buy crypto? I will either not sign up with them or take my money elsewhere. Like, yeah, which one of these is more?
The second one, David. The second one is more. Lot. You know, people are just going to be like, why can't I get this product? All the other, like, Fidelity has this, BlackRock has it.
Constraining your product offering is never a rational business case.
No, we have, like, I refuse. I'm Best Buy. I refuse to sell iPhones. Huh. I'm not going to sell. Why?
And all the Android people were like, yay. No, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen. All right. Here's another banker who's kind of maybe upset about it a little bit. But this is what we alluded to in the intro, David. Jamie Dimon has a fantastic take on Bitcoin that no one's ever thought of.
This is the risk that Jamie Dimon discovered about Bitcoin this is brand new for all of us.
You ready for this? Here's what he says.
Gold really doesn't do anything either.
Yeah, but gold's limited in supply.
So is Bitcoin.
And it's been used. So you think so, huh?
I do.
I think there's a good chance that when we get to that 20 million Bitcoins.
They go to 42.
No, that Satoshi's going to come on there, laugh hysterically, go quiet, and all Bitcoin's going to be erased.
I think, man.
How the hell do you know it's going to stop at 21? I've never met one person who told me they know for a fact. They take that
mathematically. It can't happen because by the last one will be mined in 2150, and it gets harder and harder every time there's another halving. But Jamie,
do what you want. I'll do what I want.
As for gold, you can the six characteristics that make gold valuable for 4,000 years. They're all present in Bitcoin. That's all I'll say. And I love you, and I don't want to. I also don't want to be a.
You may, Joe, you may be right.
Yeah.
I don't own gold either, so okay.
So David, how do you know Satoshi, Santoshi?
Isn't just how did you pronounce it? Satoshi.
How do you know he's not just going to reappear and
delete all the Bitcoins?
Delete the
Bitcoins. he's going to delete all the Bitcoins, and you can hear the frustration in the moderator. It's like, mathematically, you can't do that.
Oh, by the way,
you just don't.
Have you seen the CNBC people this week? Like all the anchors, they are so bullish Bitcoin, and all of these other Jamie Dimon comes on, Gary Gensler comes on, and they're like, no, that's actually not how Bitcoin works. Like they correct them, and it's like so great. Like CNBC has completely 180 pivoted on crypto, and why? Crypto. It's because they have an asset to sell. Because BlackRock's on board, Fidelity's on board, and so they're doing this kind of like. Hard interviews now.
Love it. Love it. There are going to be costs with this unholy alliance. I think we'll talk about that in a second. But let's watch this next clip where Larry Fink is coming in hot here. And somebody asked him about the ETH ETF. And he kind of gave a mum answer. But I think it's the conversation that he started talking about immediately after that I think is a big reveal. Let's watch this clip.
Yeah, this is on the, crypto favorable banker side. Here he goes.
Do you now expect other cryptocurrency ETFs? Meaning, do you think that Gary, and we'll talk to him later, Gary
Gensler,
will have to approve an Ethereum ETF? And is that a function of something the SEC has to do? Or do you think that all these things have to go to court first?
I couldn't respond to that. I see value in having an Ethereum ETF. As I said, these are just stepping stones towards tokenization. And I really do believe this is where we're going to be going. We have the technology to tokenize today. If you want to think about this. If you had a tokenized security and you have a tokenized identity, you, Andrew, the moment you buy or sell an instrument, it's known. It's on a general ledger that is all created together. You want to talk about issues around money laundering and all that. This eliminates all corruption by having a tokenized system.
Okay, so... he immediately pivots the conversation to talking about tokenization. And this spread like wildfire throughout crypto Twitter. Like the Chainlink army was like, that's us, baby. And he doubled down on it in another clip where he's just talking about tokenization the whole entire time. Let's watch this second clip.
We believe the next step going forward will be the tokenization of financial assets. And that means every stock, every bond will have its own basically CUSIP. It'll be on one general ledger. Every investor, you and I, will have our own number, our own identification. We could rid ourselves of all issues around illicit activities about bonds and stocks and digital by having a tokenization. But the most important thing, we could customize strategies through tokenization that fits every individual.
Larry Fink wants to tokenize bonds, stocks, and every financial asset that he can. And he's talking about tokenization. He sees the merits of tokenization. And that is the direction that he's taking these conversations. People are asking him about like the Bitcoin ETF, the ETH ETF. And Larry Fink is like, well, have you heard about like tokenization? I mean, he's a leader of BlackRock.
Yeah.
That's where he's steering the ship. That's yeah. where it's going.
I think Larry Fink is just telling us exactly what the roadmap he's is for do. BlackRock. It's first, mm-hmm. it's the Bitcoin ETF. Then it's the Ethereum ETF. Then it's tokenization. Like, he's literally right. telling us the plan. And you know what I think right. this means? Like, David, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. I'm not going to say it's going to happen next year. I would not be surprised to see a BlackRock dollar, a BlackRock stablecoin, okay? BlackRock tokenized assets. Of course they're going to do that, right? Jamie Dimon already is, by the way, at JP Morgan and is, you know, like not public blockchain. And I wouldn't be surprised at some point if we see a BlackRock chain, you know, like a layer yeah. two. That or
yeah, a private layer two that's the back end of the website.
I think it'll start private and I think it goes public because it's so freaking cheap to go public. Like if you get security, yeah. if you get privacy right for kind of what they need, right? DA costs are basically nothing. Why not have it audited by the security of Ethereum? Like I think that is an inevitability too. They probably got to get some regulation right, but I mean,
yeah, if they're going to have a public chain, there will be zero people on that chain that are not fully KYC'd. And he also talked about identity in that clip. He was like, oh, yeah, you have tokenization and you actually also have digital identity, which is a pretty sophisticated take for a banker. Shout out Larry Fink. Talking about identity is you are pretty far down the crypto rabbit hole if you're talking about both tokenization and identity like standards like DIDs, VCs. We've talked about this on Bankless. But also scares me. Let it be known. I don't want Larry Fink to be talking about identity on my platforms. I want none of that.
He's
get that away
to.
From me.
He's going to. They're going to. So, David, you catch my hot take that I gave in the Bankless feed?
Yeah, I was listening to it while I was driving 80 kilometers an hour over a dirt road in the middle of the Patagonia.
Wow, dude, that is badass. That's so cool that we did that. Popped a tire short, like while because you're so excited listening to it.
It's just like Ryan's spitting fire right now. It's like, oh shit, my tire's flat.
It was. This is on the Bankless premium feed, so we just put it on a different feed. Bankless citizens get that. By the way, but yeah. it was basically mm-hmm. like a 7 minute take on yeah. how I think right now, like we have an unholy alliance with the bankers, right? And yeah. that's great. I'm glad because they're a counterforce to the kind of the regulators of the world who just don't believe in private markets, I suppose. But I'm a bit worried about this alliance because where it leads is possibly AML KYC. Like I don't think Larry Fink is going to be passionate about DeFi. I don't think he's going to be like, yeah, you know, validators running at home, that's a great thing, right? And so I'm a little bit worried about the next phase of this, David, right? Like, will they try to replicate TradFi? I don't mind if that's right. there as long as you don't get rid of free and open crypto. And these people, Larry Fink, the bankers, all of them, they have tremendous power in DC. This is why the ETF got pushed through, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. they could do some real damage to a free and open crypto if they wanted to and if it's in their incentive to. They don't seem to be doing that now, but like let's just go eyes wide open into this temporary alliance was the take.
Yeah. If they can do whatever they want in their sandbox private layer two, if they make it public, fine. All of their KYC identity shit should just stay there. And that is the power of Ethereum. Like do whatever you want on your own chain. I am concerned that they put their weight behind imposing legal restrictions on United States citizens across public chains more broadly. That is my fear.
Like, it would come through in a bill, thou shalt not run validators because they're not
AML or KYC. Or, like, yeah, if you're a United States citizen, you need to register your DID on Ethereum or something like that.
Your DID? Anyways, your identity?
Your DID. Yeah, your identity.
You got another
DID. DID is decentralized identity. I'll say one more thing about your 7-minute episode. Because it was just you. You kind of had some like thoughts. You wrote it down, I'm assuming. I can tell when Ryan's reading from his notes.
Yeah.
And since like we weren't discussing you, it was like you were like speaking softer. Yeah. It was like Ryan Sean Adams ASMR.
wait. It was like really sexy.
You were like whispering into the microphone. You were like, speaking really like softly and breathily into the microphone.
That's weird. I guess I need practice at this. It was also, I still have this, like, I still have COVID, David. I'm like coughing and like my voice is all off. So I'll say that as well. But I don't know, maybe some people are into it. If so, I'll continue doing it.
There's a reason why the Bankless Premium RSS downloads are up only.
Breathless Ryan takes. That's fantastic.
Breathy Ryan, Breathy Ryan takes.
We should just rebrand it. That's what the Premium RSS feed is.
Yeah, we have David takes and Ryan breathy
wow,
takes.
Wow. Breathy Ryan. I can't believe there's a market for that. David, you have another take, though, on who else benefits from the tokenization from the banks. What does that take?
Yeah, so as soon as this clip about Larry Fink tokenizing all of BlackRock's bonds and equities and whatever, everyone was like, they're going to do it on my chain! And there was like a little bit of a false dichotomy, I think, going on between like people were like, he's going to tokenize them on Ethereum. That's where you tokenize stuff. You tokenize stuff on Ethereum. It's just what you do. And then like the Chainlink army was like, no, that's not how it works. And Chainlink God put out this tweet, which I thought was pretty good, which my tweet models after, which is... They're actually going to have their private chain, which they have complete sovereign control over. They can fork as well. It'll be just like a banker chain. And then they'll use an interop comm layer, messaging layer, like Chainlink, to send those assets outbound. And it won't be tokenized on Ethereum. They will just find themselves gravitating towards Ethereum because that's where liquidity is. That's where DeFi is. So that's my take. That's how I think this is going to happen. So private BlackRock chain. Interop middle layer, and then they can go anywhere. They could go to Solana if they wanted to, but my claim is they're going to go to DeFi on Ethereum because they'll go to DeFi on Ethereum as a function of what like market share DeFi on Ethereum has in terms of like liquidity and users and like all that stuff. Liquidity
No, you're wrong. They'll go to my chain, my bags, my chain. That's where they're going to go, David.
Your bags are my bags, bro.
Oh, are they? Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's another way it could happen, right? I do still think they'll have a sidechain layer too, though, at some point, but we'll have to see. Anyway, it's good for crypto assets, at least right now. And I think we should end with this, another Franklin Templeton tweet, just to round out this section. We'll be the bankers on our side.
This will be the second of like 30 memes that came out of the Franklin Templeton Twitter account.
Go for it.
Franklin Templeton says, we are excited about ETH and its ecosystem despite the midlife crisis it recently experienced. We see a bright future with many strong tailwinds to push the Ethereum ecosystem forward. EIP 4844, Alt-DA, community revitalization and restaking.
What? They know these things? Oh my God. Yeah. What else we got, David?
What else we got? Coming up next, what upgrades come after, in addition to EIP 4844? We have Dankun around the corner, but we already have the next upgrade gearing up after that. Solana announces the Saga phone number 2. And of course, everyone's favorite pastime, the SEC getting grilled during Congress, during a Coinbase hearing. We're going to talk about all of this and more. But first, we're going to check out Mantle, a layer 2 with staking. You can stake your ETH with a layer 2 now. That's Mantle. Check them out. There's a link in the show notes. We're going to go hear from them right now. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC-20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow at Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Blobs are on Gorli. Franklin Templeton, try to keep up.
What kind of sentence is that?
Try to keep up with
Blobs
this crypto.
Gorli.
So true, though. Can you make sense of what I just said for people who haven't been keeping up?
Yes. EIP-4844, aka Proto Dank Sharding, which creates a blob space on Ethereum so that transaction fees from call data on layer twos can reduce by 95% and we can have cheaper transactions on layer twos. Did you follow all that?
Yes. And Gorli is the testnet. Right,
and Gorli
is
the testnet.
So it's the thing you do before you go to mainnet. So this means blob space is coming and protodank sharding is coming. Yes.
Yeah. Basically, we are on the final hours of Dankun. You run through. You do your testnet upgrades. You upgrade testnet number one. That was Gorli. Next one will be Holsky, I think. Sepolia as well. Once you hit all the testnets and all the testnets successfully have their fork. Then we're like, all right, well, there's nothing else to do other than mainnet. I guess we just do mainnet. And that's how an Ethereum merge happens, an Ethereum fork happens. Wow. So if one successful testnet is successful, then you move on to the next one. And once they're all successful, then we full send the full thing.
Okay, but then the layer two still need to turn it on. So what has to happen with Optimism, Tycho, Scroll, Arbitrum, all these things?
Yeah, so they need to, instead of using the call data of Ethereum block space, you just need to use blob space. So different layer twos just have to like upgrade for that. So the OP stack, according to Proto, who is Proto Lambda, who's the Proto and Proto Dank Sharding, by the way, he's like, he took Dankrat's Dank Sharding and was like, but you can do this and we can ship it earlier. And that's 4844. There's some Ethereum lore for you. Saying, looking to be ready for Optimism Governance Voting Cycle 19, which completes in early March and then hopefully will roll out shortly on the layer one, so they'll be ready. Tycho for mainnet, the current plan is to launch with 4844 live already, which means Tycho is going to launch as a network. Scroll's already ready to go. Arbitrum 1 and Nova, these decisions will be controlled by the on-chain contracts that are automatically already in the hands of the Arbitrum DAO. So the DAO needs to vote for it. They will, and it'll be approved 100%.
They're all ready to go. Do it. Is the bottom line here. And the big question, I think, on some people's mind is always, what's next? So we have this hard fork, but what about the next hard fork? What about second hard fork? So after Dankun, there's another hard fork that is kind of, it's not scheduled yet, but it is kind of planned out. It's called Pectra.
Well, technically, Dankun isn't even scheduled yet.
Thank you. Thank you. You're technically right, David.
The Ethereum Foundation would like you to know. It's not scheduled. There's no date.
Yeah, there's no date. We have no idea when it's coming. It'll be March. Yeah. March or March. April. no idea when it's coming. The next hard fork, though, after that, Pectra, what does it include? Verkel trees, David. What are these? The first step.
Love them.
You love Verkel trees? You're a big Verkel tree guy?
I love Verkel trees. Big Verkel guy.
Well, you should, because they're the first step to stateless clients. And that means lower hardware to run a node. That's fantastic, because it increases our ability to maintain decentralization on Ethereum. Also, we get rid of the necessity to grant unlimited approvals. If you are on chain, you know what a pain this is when you have to say, oh, yeah, you have approval to my token balance to do something on an app. There's an auth and auth call part, like EIP, that helps to fix that. Also, there's a few other things too. Node operators get the ability to spin up a validator. You're no longer capped with 32 ETH, so you can have more than 32 ETH in a single validator. There's inclusionless, which improves censorship resistance. A lot of small things that amount to like a pretty exciting upgrade, actually.
Yeah, for the next one. Good upgrade.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Verkel trees, I want to double click on that one. First, I have to save this clients. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Verkel guy.
Yeah, you said in the notes we have lower hardware requirements to run a node. Well, you can also just like, once you do that, you can just increase the demands on that hardware and be at equilibrium. Do you remember when we were doing EIP 1559 and then we were also doing the merge and everyone's like, it's going to lower gas fees, right? It's going to lower gas fees, right? And we were all like, no, it's actually not going to lower gas fees. It's going to burn them, but it's not going to lower them. And then the same thing with the merge. We were like, it's going to lower gas fees. And we're like, guys, no, it's not lowering gas fees.
Oh, yeah. We'll just fill up the additional validate space, you're saying?
No, no. There was just no gas. It was, just wasn't about gas fees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, there was no increase in bandwidth at all. Verkle trees and the Verge as a part of the Ethereum roadmap as a whole is actually reducing, can actually reduce gas fees. It will create room for us to increase the gas limit, potentially allows for a higher gas limit. So we will actually be able to have reduced gas fees on the layer one once this goes in.
Yeah.
And this is, it's moving Ethereum, you know, the whole like Solana meme of Moore's Law, scaling with Moore's Law. This is Ethereum's version of that. The Verge is scaling Ethereum layer one in parallel with Moore's Law. And so like, I don't think people really are like, understand that really at all.
Yeah. People, Franklin Templeton, meme that, okay? You don't understand Verkle trees yet, do you?
Your dog with hat was pretty good. do Verkle
do
trees.
Do Verkle. That's hard mode. Okay, so Vitalik was also championing last week, increasing the block size. You see this, David?
Yes, which is exactly what we're talking about. So yeah, on Reddit, Vitalik was asked, how much gas limit could we safely increase now and also after Verkle? And Vitalik responded, I think doing a modest gas limit even today is reasonable. The gas limit is basically block size. How much data can go in a block is basically throughput. The gas limit has not been increased for nearly 3 years, which is the longest time ever in protocol's history. And so, you know, Moore's Law continues. And Vitalik saying, yo, like, we've actually been lagging Moore's Law. We could increase the gas fees if we wanted to. He didn't answer specifically about after the inclusion of Verkle trees. But this is a question that I will ask Mike Noider and Dom when we do our episode on the Ethereum roadmap and we talk about this.
You are such a Verkle tree maxi, David. Any chance you get to talk about Verkle trees, man, you are just...
Verge me, baby.
David, there's just some, a sad exploit this week. Socket and its exchange, Bungie, was exploited for $3.3 million. So Socket is kind of like a interoperability protocol, kind of like a bridging type of protocol.
Yeah, it's a bridge aggregator.
Yeah.
I've used it a lot.
Yeah. It's well, so you've used it maybe directly. And also there are apps you may have used that may use Socket didn't know you were actually using Socket under the covers. So talk about the fallout of this and kind of what it caused.
Yeah, so there was a route that was incorporated into Socket, which is a very normal thing to do. They just incorporate routes. One of them had an exploit in it that was exploited. And so the exploiter was draining people's wallets, and Socket realized it extremely quickly and paused that particular route and just like hit freeze on it. And only $3.3 million was stolen. Like $3.3 million is $3.3 million. But in the grand scheme of hacks, I would call that a single-digit million-dollar hack.
From people who allowed Socket
right.
to have yeah. access to some amount of tokens on their account and didn't revoke that access. And it happened, like, I don't know, there's a period of time where they didn't realize and didn't pause the contract. And so people's wallets were drained without them knowing it.
Right. So when you make an approval these days in Ethereum, I think MetaMask and both Rabi does this. Like you will send like 500 DAI across a transaction and then you will approve, you will give allowances for 500 DAI. If you ever set it to like max, then this exploit could have happened to you. But if you approved 500 and then you sent 500, the allowances are
down. Yeah, like say if you had 1,000 DAI in your account and you only sent 500, well, the other 500 would still be approved, right?
Yes, exactly.
So yeah. How do you check this, David? How do you figure this out if you've given that approval and...
Yeah, there's a website called revoke.cash, which is pretty useful. Definitely learn how to use that if you're navigating, if you're on-chain on Ethereum. But I do believe there is an upgrade. We'll have to check on this. Auth and auth call in Pectra, the next upgrade after Dankun.
Yeah, we were just talking about
it. Mitigate this.
Yeah, I think it could mitigate this. Also, I think wallet UX really needs to improve. Like, this is another reminder that we're all alpha testing this. This is not grandma. Yeah. This is not ready for grandma or your parents yet, all right? No. So, like, not when we have UX problems like this. It's just such a pain to have to allow, like, revoke access. Like, I was going through a list of wallets I have yesterday and be like, oh, crap, did I use Socket? I don't know. I was plugging wallets into this interface, right. It's really messy right now, David. It's hard. Yeah. And I think we've got a lot of steps to approve it. One cool thing is, do you know, Rabi will tell you when there's an exploit as new as another crypto wallet.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. And they'll help you. Like, they have the revoke.cache kind of like functionality built into their wallet in the browser. It's stuff like that that's going to make a difference, and we really have to improve on it. There's also an update this week from the Coinbase versus SEC case. You know how the SEC was like, hey, Coinbase, everything you list, maybe aside from Bitcoin, is a security, and you should stop doing that, and we're going to bring you to court. Well, that case is basically playing out right now. So from the court case, this is the judge asking the SEC lawyer whether the token issuers named in the complaint violated securities law, right? Because that's why the SEC was bringing them to court. Coinbase violated securities law, of course. And so she asked about this. Did it violate securities law? And the SEC lawyer said, well, not exactly, Your Honor. Those tokens named in the complaint are computer code. And the judge responded, I'm smiling, sir, because that's kind of what your friends at the back are saying. And they're wondering why we're here, pointing to like Coinbase at the back, wondering why we're actually here.
Your friends at the back table. I hope Paul was there just like snickering.
Yeah, I mean, so she said this, it is a real fear that I have that your argument, speaking to the SEC, is just sweeping too broadly, labeling collectibles as securities as well. There's another part where the SEC lawyers says that Coinbase says crypto is a $1 trillion asset class. You know, they say, ooh, we don't really know. How do we know this? I mean, like, we talk about it in the beginning of every show, like, it is a $1 trillion asset class. Anyway, we disagree that crypto is an asset class. The lawyer says they're not even asset class, David. It is a rounding error in the economy and requires no new laws. The U.S. equity market is $100 trillion and the global market is $400 trillion. Crypto is a rounding error. That's what the SEC lawyer said in this court case, okay?
Why is Gary Gensler so obsessed with it?
Seriously, I mean, somebody needs to tell these people they don't get to decide. They don't get to decide what a new asset class is. That's like beyond their mandate. No one's asking for that. I don't know why they think they can actually weigh in here.
No one asks your opinion, SEC.
Like, they do securities, okay? They don't get to weigh on what's a real asset class and what's not.
Jake Chervinsky put out a pretty good tweet thread where he says, today's Coinbase hearing revealed a key flaw in the SEC's legal theory. It turns nearly every asset on the planet into a security.
Oops.
This is something that I realized, Ryan, after we did our Josh Rosenthal episode, the Crypto Renaissance, where he talked about like, oh yeah, the money printer was one of these key technologies that birthed the Renaissance.
Yeah.
And then you and I started like unpacking and like chewing on what that really meant. And like over the next like few weeks, we were like, oh, we have crypto, we have a money printer for financial assets. And then we were like, oh, that's going to scare the shit out of the SEC.
Yeah.
Because like, tokenized long sword of flame in your game,
yeah,
right? Like tokenized dog with hat, tokenized Pokemon cards. And we are going to just like DDoS the SEC with financial assets of all types and backgrounds and properties and upside or commodity-like properties, like whatever. And so the SEC is going for the broadest possible interpretation, whereas like everything is, we control everything.
Well, I mean,
we're just DDoSing them. That's, there's too many of our assets for them to
regulate.
But
that's the case that they're trying to make in the court, that everything is a security. And the judge is like, no, it's not. You can't do that.
But it's too cringe of a statement to make for it to like stand up in court. Like, no, you don't get to regulate on-chain Pokemon cards, Gary Gensler. That's not what you do.
Yeah, do you remember when Richie Torres was grilling Gary Gensler and just being like,
about Pokemon cards?
Can you tell me whether a Pokemon card is a security? Right. And Gary Gensler couldn't. He was just like dodging the question.
He was like facts and circumstances. Yeah. And then the Pokemon card, that was our meme. That meme came from crypto.
Yeah.
And so Richie Torres was like, oh, the crypto people are making fun of Gary Gensler because he's trying to tokenize Pokemon cards. I'm going to use that, which is the power of memes.
Speaking of memes, I don't know how this relates, but Donald Trump, okay? Former Donald Trump says he will never allow the creation of a central bank digital currency. Let's hear him.
Tonight, I'm also making another promise to protect Americans from government tyranny. As your president, I will never allow the creation of a central bank digital currency. You know about that?
It's interesting to see like the Trump fans cheering for that. Of course they would, but just like, I didn't know that they cared so deeply about that, but they probably just cheered.
Yeah, I wonder how many, whether Biden will have a response, whether the Democrats will have a response on like what their
Biden
position is.
Biden is like, I'm going to give you a CBDC. And all of the Warren is like, yay.
Warren, Elizabeth Warren very much wants that. That is her, yes, her end state. Right. Of course, there's this place in the middle where you have like USDC and like private industry kind of competing.
Right. USDC is my CBDC.
Yeah, that's where I fall. Anyway, tell me about the Solana phone, David.
Solana phone number two. Okay, so the first Solana phone, the Saga phone, which started going for like $5,000 a piece on eBay because of the bonk price appreciation, and everyone just kind of started speculating.
Because you got an airdrop with your phone. You got bonk with your phone.
You got an airdrop with your phone, but like it didn't justify the cost of the phone, but people started buying these phones anyways just because like there it's a limited edition. It turned into an NFT, like only 20,000 Saga phones. And so if you have a Saga phone, you're like by definition an early Solana user amongst all the other like airdrops that are on them. And so they were never going to do another phone because it kind of flopped. They had like 5,000-6,000 of these Saga phones sell out of 20,000. And then the bonk token goes up like 10,000% and then they instantly sell out. So they're rolling it back. The Saga phone chapter 2 is coming out. And so there is going to be, you can buy one for a deposit of $450 designed to cover the full price of the device, expected to ship in the first half of 2025. And then there's just a bunch of like Solana apps embedded on there. Backpack, Mad Lads, Tensor, Phantom, stuff, Magic Eden.
You think people are hoping for some more airdrops on this? Like, you know, Bonk V2? Give me my...
it's until further notice.
Yeah, well, there you go. David, meme of the week. Let's close this episode out. What are we looking at?
Of course, it's a Franklin Templeton meme because they just gave us so much collateral to work with. This is the meme of the car veering off the highway, taking a hard pivot, and it's the 60-40 portfolio. If you go straight, you get the nice 60-40 portfolio, 60% equities, 40% bonds. Or you could take the hard right and you can get 60-40 plus Bitcoin. And, this is Franklin Templeton taking that hard right.
Yeah, the classic 60-40. That's the safe way to invest. But now Wall Street wants you to own a little bit of Bitcoin too, okay? Stocks, bonds, and crypto. That's what the message is.
I think explaining memes, Ryan, is probably the most cringe thing that we do on the show.
I don't think so. I think we do many other cringe things that I'm sure the commenters would tell us about. YouTube.
YouTube. Tell us how cringe we are.
Tell us how cringe we are. Again, thank you.
We will totally read those comments.
Going to end with risk in a minute, but disclosures, both David and I are investors in Skrull and Socket. I'm also an angel investor in Arbitrum. Both David and I hold some crypto. You can see all of those disclosures at bankless.com/disclosures. And of course, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in. We're on the path west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.